familiar to you from his regular show on morning 9 to noon. Andrew is also currently campaigns director at FinSec, if I got that right, but is shortly to move to the to be the Green Party political director. Andrew will talk about the political side of this and the political effects. Thank you very much.
Cool. I'll try to be short because I actually really want to hear what people here have to say. But just before I get into it, I just want to acknowledge the previous speakers, because I guess probably like a lot of people here, we don't know the details about these things, and I kind of, you know, Jane wrote me in a few weeks ago, and FinSec, the union that I work for, has obviously been doing work around the necessity to re-regulate, not just in New Zealand, but internationally, our finance system, to make it work for people, not banks, and major insurance companies who we're bailing out and who continue to pay enormous bonuses to their CEOs and bosses and things like that. But hadn't necessarily thought about that in the context of free trade agreements. And so I guess, like many of you, a lot of the information that we've heard tonight is relatively new. So I just want to thank Jane for that, I guess, broad overview. I think for Mike for bringing that New Zealand perspective, and obviously the Indigenous perspective is relevant here, but also relevant in other countries covered by the TPP. And then Sanya for the specifics, you know, when you actually understand that entering these things mean getting better is going to cost more or not be available for lots of people because the price of drugs is going to go up so much. It kind of brings it home as to why we need to reject these rules that are being forced upon us. And I was also just thinking, when I was watching people and sort of remembering, that the last time I was in this building was for a trade agreement of another sort. It was for friend's wedding. I just was kind of thinking about the contrasts as a stakeholder, both here this week and I guess a stakeholder in their marriage and their relationship. I didn't have to stand outside while they got married. I was allowed in the room. I could watch it happen. I didn't have to rely on kind of rumours or bailing people up in breaks to find out had they kissed or what happened when they exchanged rings. The text of their vows was public. I heard it. It was recorded. We watched it afterwards. Not so across the road, despite our request this week. There was a point in the wedding where we were asked as a congregation to affirm it. It's an opportunity that we are unlikely to get when and if this becomes public in any sense and goes before Parliament, or if so, we'll have no say. And the food was much better at the wedding than what we're getting across the road. And I guess that kind of brings this very political question that I think is very important about transparency. Because the point that that we've been making yesterday in the press conference and elsewhere is that this is not a private contract. The people over there behave as if this is a contract that is being negotiated where secrecy is essential because it's a business deal as such. But it is not a business deal, though it is a deal for business. It is a public contract that affects all of us here and all of us in the 8 other countries who are signatories to it too, who I think we should have a degree of solidarity with, because they are like us. Many of them, like us, will also be negatively affected in the same but in also different ways that perhaps yet we don't understand. And so that was why we called for the transparency, and it was interesting yesterday at the press conference that that we successfully sort of gatecrashed by a number of us saying, yes, we'll go to it, and then finding that it was actually about half and half sort of us, unions and NGOs and progressive people, and sort of half business, which is unusual to kind of have that, that level of representation. And what happened was when the guy Stephen Jacoby from the New Zealand US Council was pressed on this issue, he basically said the reason why we can't allow the text to become public was if it were made public, it would derail the process. Which essentially is an admission that if the public knew what was being discussed, they would be outraged. And that is why transparency is going to have to be so critical and needs to be the first thing that we achieve when we are going to mobilise to stop this agreement going through. And so that is why we need to continue the push on that. It would also reveal perhaps that there is some dishonesty in the motivations regarding this. And I think that, you know, if you ask the average New Zealander, because of the political consensus around free trade deals between the two major parties, most people think that free trade is good for New Zealand. There is so little analysis that is able to be done, or if it's done, it is done after the event, and so there is very limited ability for there to be the public dialogue at the very time which is needed, which is the time in which politicians come under pressure, which is the time before they make decisions. Politicians never come under pressure after a decision's happened. They either walk away and don't do it because they know it will cost them votes, or the political pressure is not sufficient and so they can get away with it. That's kind of how decision-making in politics is made. So if we have the ability to mobilise before and for people to understand the implications before the decisions are made, then that is all the more important. And so we need to understand that the motivation for keeping this secret is so that those decisions can be made in secret and for us not to have the ability to deal with it. The other point that I want to make is that the rights that this gives investors and companies, etc., in terms of the investor right components, which again we're not 100% sure of, but have been a part of other free trade agreements, give it a time in human history which where corporations have brought not just American but economies all around the world to their knees, a set of rights to the organisations and people who have proven themselves the least worthy citizens to have them, the least worthy to be given rights of collective interest, but rather rights of self-interest that are equivalent to a state. Why would we give Merrill Lynch, AIG, Citibank, any of those, Warner Brothers, any of those corporations more rights? We should be giving them less. We should be stripping them of the rights that they currently have. They have proven themselves unworthy. They have proven themselves unethical. They have proven themselves to be not acting in our interests. And I think, as Jane said at the very beginning, that an agreement for the 21st century would be an agreement where we were creating rules around how to save the environment, how to make sure that everyone gets food, how to make sure that we have fair economic rules so that we're not subject to further economic collapse, rules that mean that we have a fair and equitable access to water, rules that mean the rights of Indigenous people are protected and enhanced. None of that is in this agreement. There's no chapters. There's not a working group on Indigenous rights. There's not a working group on, you know, how to solve the environmental problems we face over here. They are all moving in the opposite direction. So I think that what we need to understand is that within the last few years, global capitalism brought itself to its knees and is very much in question. And we have to understand these TPP negotiations within the context of the very people who brought our economies to their knees as a mechanism to lock in the rules at the very time in which those rules are in question, to lock in those rules so that they can't be changed, to remove the ability and sovereignty of nations to defend against corporations who act in their self-interest as opposed to the interest of us, to lock those rules in and so which they cannot be changed. We need to understand this move at this time as another act in the neoliberal economic agenda to entrench the rules which have proven to be so disastrous to all of us. So how do we respond and what needs to change? I think the challenge, and might challenge the Māori Party, and I think that was very important, I was to challenge the Labor Party to break the mainstream political consensus around trade policy. Because the biggest problem in New Zealand in terms of an honest public debate is that our two major parties share a consensus on trade policy, on secret negotiations, and on not dealing with this problem in an honest way. And I think that's going to be very difficult while the leader of the Labor Party is a former trade minister who has been entrenched in this process. But equally, if he can see the light, he potentially is also the best person to change Labor's position on it. And I think that if we unlock that political consensus, then that will also mobilise, people, many Labor Party activists I know who care about these issues but feel that they can't act on them because of their party who holds them back. And so I think there needs to be leadership from the Labor Party on that. And I think, unfortunately, as well, my analysis would also be that Labor's position holds many trade unions back, not just the trade unions that are affiliated to the Labor Party, but many trade unions feel, well, we agreed with free trade in the 2000s when Labor was there, and can we really have a go at that now? So that needs to change. I think that Labor's policy changing on this would unlock many of their supporters, and it would unlock many of the trade unions in terms of buying into that. We also need to get around the fact that the arguments that there are bigger issues like jobs or the various crises that I've identified or the limited capability of people to respond are actually symptoms of the problem. So actually rejecting the TPP means that we can protect jobs and do stuff about creating them. It means that we actually have a mechanism or more freedom to resolve the various crises. So the TPP is integrated into the other issues that I know that many of you will be working on. So I'm not saying don't stop working on creating jobs or fixing environmental problems or working on those other issues, but integrate this work into them, because it's all very well to do that work, but if we sign up to this and limit our options, then actually our ability to deal with those issues is severely limited. So don't rule yourself out of being involved in this campaign because you're involved in others. Integrate this into your various campaigning because it will affect the issues you're working on. It is a complex issue and there is much media bias, and I think that we all need to take the opportunity to invite those who do know and can talk and explain these things in the way that Jane can and that Bill can and that others can. Invite them to your organisations like the offer that we've received already here tonight. Get this word out and explain it to people. The more people that know about it, the better. And it is complex. You know, I've been working in this area in terms of the financial services side of things, and even I hadn't fully really considered the implications until I read Jane's book and have been hanging out here in the last few days. And so please, if any of you have the ability, to invite speakers to your organisation, to hold meetings in your local communities, please ask some of the people here who have the expertise to come forward and do that. I know that I'm offering their time and they're incredibly busy and there are other people, but a key step in this campaign has to be broader understanding and education on this issue. And I think finally, I also want to agree with the argument about making a coalition a broad-based coalition. And in fact, that can even include New Zealand or businesses. And I wouldn't normally say this, but one of the groups that we discovered here yesterday is a group of IT businesses who are very concerned, New Zealand locally owned IT businesses, who are very concerned about the implications for them. Small and medium businesses do not necessarily benefit from these free trade agreements. Local businesses do not necessarily benefit from them. And I think bringing that business voice, because again, we have this monopoly of this business voice, which is really a voice for Fonterra and the large corporations, and it's not actually a voice for many businesses in New Zealand. And also align with consumers and other organisations, Age Concern, must be very concerned about the implications for some pharmaceutical access for old people, elderly people, etc. Let's make it a broad-based coalition. So I just really want to thank Jane and Sanya and Mike for their insights into the specificity, but I guess challenge all of us to become not experts but supporters with a little bit of knowledge, to be able to talk about these things in our communities, to be able to take this back, to be part of a broad-based coalition, to get rid of the TPP in order to create a fairer world and a fairer Aotearoa. Thank you.